premier family dining option, serving the St. Louis area for over 46 years. Joe Bacardi's has four convenient locations in Eureka, Watson Road, Fenton, and Columbia, Illinois. Serving hand-rolled St. Louis-style pizzas, a variety of pastas, steaks, chicken, seafood, and salads. I recommend the lasagna and spinach salad, some of the best food I've ever had in St. Louis. For menus, locations, and coupons, visit JoeBacardi's.com.
Do you have big dreams, big plans? Well, you'll need a small rate. Royal Banks of Missouri can help build your future. Royal's home equity rates are at a historical low. And for a limited time, Royal Banks is offering one of the area's best home equity lines of credit. Call 314-212-1500 to talk to a representative today. Royal Banks of Missouri, investing in St. Louis for over 50 years. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Kevin Moret here from Mentality Men's Health. We see every day that there are two kinds of guys. Those that accept lower testosterone and all the effects on their mind and body. Then there's our clients. They want healthy hormone levels, energy, and metabolism through their prime years. Our physicians specialize in taking care of men, optimizing hormones, and keeping them at maximum performance in their careers and families. Our services are covered by insurance, so every guy can afford it. Schedule a free consultation at lowtusa.com. That's lowtusa.com.
Hi, I'm Darren Atkins. You may know me as Plowsy or the Plowhop. Long story short, I worked here at 590 The Fan, and then I didn't. And now I'm back. And it's thanks in part to Dukes and Trumans and Soulard. Come check out Dukes and Trumans and Soulard before and after Blues and Cardinals games. Park at either bar and hop on their free shuttle to any downtown home game. Check them out at dukesandsoulard.com and trumansandsoulard.com.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law, who is right, who is wrong, who is for and who's against the law? Well, you see, I didn't really mean
folks,
you
it's time for the smart people to call right now. The smart people will dial immediately when they hear these numbers. 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590, because it's time to check in with Scott Sherman. Scott Sherman is brought to you by Dr. Steve Staley. Dr. Staley is a sports medicine physician, but you don't have to be an athlete to go get things taken care of there. He believes in minimally invasive procedures for arthritis, for shoulder injuries, and leg, and whatever. And big proponent of PRP. And if you're in the military, you can have that for half price if you're active military. You can find out more about Dr. Staley and what he does so well at his website, which is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/AMandThePM. His website is there. His phone number is there, Dr. Steve Staley. We'll talk about him a little bit again before we're finished. Once again, the numbers are still open, folks. We're not going to play this game of like, okay, it's over, and then everybody calls. 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Frank.
I know that before we get started, you want to address last Thursday's segment.
Yes, I do. Last Thursday, Jack called. And sadly and tragically, his wife passed away from MRSA, which was on her death certificate. And MRSA is a very dangerous and serious infection that costs the lives of a great deal many more people than I even thought. During that conversation, which with Jack was about 7.5 minutes in about his situation, but for about 2 minutes, I went back and listened because that was the right thing to do about our conversation. For about 2 minutes, we talked about MRSA. You had a question about what it was. Tim had a story about his dad. And I made a few comments about MRSA and with respect to the healthcare field. And we had a caller after that who was a surgeon. He said he was. And he was, I think you could say, animated about some of the comments that I had made. In particular, one, that you were, he had said that I had said it was more likely than not that you would contract something being in a hospital and that hospitals were filthy. And so he was pretty tough on me, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to go back and listen to that. And I did. And for about 47 seconds of the segment, I talked about and gave my sort of take on MRSA and hospitals. And I should not have, even though if you listen to it, I was being, I guess, facetious about the implication that you're more likely than not to get MRSA in a hospital. You're not. So I apologize for that. Now are you ready for the rest of it, Frank?
Yeah.
It's worse than I even imagined.
Okay.
20,000 people. The last year, and these are numbers from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. I went back. I spent a lot of time looking to make sure my numbers were right because I think I am very honored by the fact you consider me fair, and my fairness only comes about my preparation. And last week, I didn't know we were going to talk about MRSA. I knew something about it, but I went back and I checked. Last year, about 20,000 people died from MRSA. And over 119,000, almost 120,000 people contracted MRSA. Now, I checked about seven different websites, all of which had the same number. Of people who contract MRSA, 85% of them contracted in a hospital or some medical facility. So when I said that they're filthy places and dirtier than a roadside or truck stop bathroom or a dirty kitchen, with respect to MRSA, I'm 100% right. Because more people last year, or 2017, that's the last number, died of MRSA than were killed in all homicides that year. Five times as many people than died in motorcycle crashes, and more people died of MRSA than the following cancers that year. Bladder cancer, kidney or renal cancer, skin cancer, thyroid cancer, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and very close to all leukemias. So what you're talking about with MRSA, not sepsis, which is often confused by sort of the body breaking down, but MRSA, which is, I will say it and say it as well as I can, methicillin-resistant systemic Staphylococcus aureus, which all sounds filthy.
Close enough. Yes, it does.
That particular strain of infection, MRSA, is a killer, and that killer is killing people at a huge rate. And while in the last 10 years or so there's been a huge effort, and I did go back, Frank, and check, and anybody can check the podcast, I was very kind to the very professional and diligent people in the healthcare field, and I did say that even though they try their best and oftentimes do everything they can, that MRSA is in these facilities, and it's the facility's fault. I stand by that too.
And how do they know it's there for people to catch? How would
I'll
they
tell
keep
you
it
why?
Out of there?
You. This is something that was eye opening to me. The VA, of all places, that you know, they get the reputation for the rats and the filthy this and that. The VA has a test that costs about $20, and my understanding is for about the last 5 years, there's been a pilot program to test every patient at the VA, and if they're VA patients out there, or doctors or nurses, to test them for MRSA or to test for MRSA, and the numbers at the VA have gone down significantly. So I will say this, it is a major killer. You're talking about 20,000 people a year. It is a terrible infector of 120,000 people a year, and the same percentage of people, 85%, who contract MRSA from a medical facility, a hospital, are the same percentage that contract lung cancer who are smokers. So yes, it's possible to get lung cancer and not be a smoker, but it's about the same likelihood that you are not in a hospital and you get MRSA. So
I think the problem with and the reason the surgeon was upset is that when you say hospitals, just broad statement, hospitals, period, are filthy, dirty, disgusting places, dirtier than a roadside restroom. That's a bit much. They are havens, obviously, breeding grounds for this MRSA. I mean, it's a place to go, and if you're going to catch MRSA, chances are better catching it there than anywhere else. But aside from that, I don't think that hospitals are filthy, disgusting, roadside restroom, dirty type places. I think that was probably what set.
Well, he said I was doing a disservice by telling people that MRSA was the place, or that hospitals were the place you get MRSA, and it turns out that hospitals are the place
you get
MRSA.
Well, that part obviously now we know is true.
I'm going to back off, and I went back and listened to it, and I did chuckle, and it was inappropriate to chuckle, but when I said that you're more likely than not to contract something, not MRSA, by going in a hospital, I was being facetious, and my silly chuckle was that. So it wasn't funny, But it also isn't necessarily untrue that the place that you get MRSA is a medical facility. And I think two things. One, it's fixable because the numbers have gone down, especially at the VA. So maybe the hospitals aren't doing everything they're supposed to be doing. Maybe their staffs aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. And the other part is this. It's very underreported. MRSA is not always on the death certificate. A lot of times you'll see sepsis, which is sort of a body breakdown, or you'll see some other cause of death. And the other part is this. He mentioned the CDC in its reporting. That is all voluntary. It's done by the medical facilities and the hospitals by like an annual report that they fill out. There's no crime for not filling it out or for underreporting. And so if there's anything about MRSA, it's an underreported, even bigger problem than the CDC's numbers even have. And if anybody wants those things and they send me an email, I'll send you my research, which comes from the CDC.
Okay, well, I don't ever hear or know a lot about MRSA. I do now a little bit. But here's the thing. It can't be as simple as just giving somebody a $20 test, and if they fail and it shows up positive for MRSA, sorry, you can't come in the hospital. What about emergency room situations where they don't have time to test for MRSA? We got to save somebody's life and get them in intensive care.
Absolutely.
I mean, how do you ever not have MRSA in the hospital for somebody else to catch?
There's a very difficult ability in an emergent situation for people to have to not be in contact with some sort of bacteria or virus. But we're not just talking about emergency rooms. We're talking about elective surgery. We're talking about hospital rooms where people have been there for some time. And the way in which a lot of MRSA is contracted is by its being transmitted through hands from doorknobs and food service and from other types of careful kind of treatment.
All right, so when you're getting ready to admit somebody to the hospital, let's say you give them the test and they show positive for MRSA, what do you do with that person?
Well,
sorry, you can't come to the hospital?
Just so people know, MRSA is very similar to staph, and most people have staph wandering around their skin somewhere. But the resistance of MRSA, which is the difference, is that antibiotics, the most powerful antibiotics, they don't work on it and you just die. So what the VA seems to be doing right is to screen their patients better and then to take the really careful precautions about the cleaning of the floors, the cleaning of door handles and all of the medical paraphernalia that they go from one room to another. So it's not, quote, some dirty nurse's fault, but MRSA is a hospital bred and hospital transmitted problem, and it is killing and infecting way too many people. It is preventable. And I'm not saying they could take it down to zero, but in the last 5 years, the numbers, although they were looking good, they have slowed, and now with the superbug, which people have talked about is another strain of MRSA, you're seeing that they have become the places where a lot of deadly infections are transmitted. And I went back and listened, Frank. I never said that Jack's wife contracted it there, or even that it was the hospital's fault. There's sort of this doctrine now where it's become an almost accepted risk for going there. But I would.
Well, if there's an 85% chance, I mean, if 85% of the cases come from hospitals, right. Then, yeah, of course.
And that 3% number, think about the number. If you had a 3% chance of dying by going to a Cardinals game, I mean, you might go. I don't know that you'd go to every game. So, you know, yeah. The people that go and have to go time and again, and they seem to be the ones with the compromised immune systems, babies, sick people, folks that have some sort of immune issue, the more times you go, that 3% might catch up with you. So, yes, you do not have a more chance than not of contracting something in a hospital. The rest of it, okay. I stand by.
All right, we have one line open. Somebody needs to jump on it, then we're going to take these calls. 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Brian, thank you for your patience. Welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Hey, great. Good, Brian. How are you?
Good. I got a question. I had a job We had insurance, medical insurance, through the job. They paid 100% of mine, and they paid 50% of my wife's. Well, you know, it kept going up and up and up. So I asked the owner's daughter takes care of the office. So I asked her, and I told her I wanted to see something showing how much my wife's insurance was. Well, she would never give me nothing to show me how much it was. She would just keep charging me, you know, she'd take it out at the end of the month at one payment, you know. Well, it got to be over $500 where they would take out $500 out of one check.
So she's like the HR person for the company you work for?
Yes. So I ended up, he sold the business, so I ended up losing my job, and I'm still asking her, you know, because I wanted to see, you know, how much the insurance was, but she will never provide me nothing. At one time, she wrote down some numbers on a piece of paper, and she goes, this is how much it is, and just wrote the numbers down.
That's terrible.
I'm not sure I understand what you're asking her for. You're asking her for how much you're paying for premiums for your wife, or for how much coverage she has?
No, the premiums.
I would think that would be easy to find out. How do you pay the premiums?
It's taken out of my check. So
no,
I really
can't you look at it should be on your check stub.
He's wanting to know what the total is from the insurance company, like what they're charging the business that he was working in, because he's supposed to be paying half.
Brian, did you ever get a plan book either emailed or given to you, the health plan book? You know which health plan it was. Don't say it, but did you know which one it was?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Contact them.
I did. I actually talked to them, and I talked to them through an email, and I told the lady what I wanted, and she sent me a copy of my benefits of what my insurance covers. So I emailed her back, and I said I would like to know what the premium is, so I have something to compare looking for new insurance. And she called the HR person of the company I was working for, and then she emailed me back and she says, you need to contact her and get it from her.
No, as a plan,
not to give it to you.
As a plan member, whether you directly deal with them or not, the plan administrator, the people in charge of that plan, owe you explanations as to not only what your benefits are and all that, but also where your premiums went, especially since you don't have any faith and can't really communicate with the former HR person. I guess, what are you trying to say, you feel like you kind of got ripped off because there's a difference in coverage? Okay. Then I would definitely contact them, and you keep talking to somebody until you get the answer. And say this, ombudsman. That might be a word. That's a person that's sort of the liaison or the go-between that company and the plan members. So call them back and talk to them on the phone. And get those answers, because I can't say what the difference is, but if your wife's coverage was not the same as yours, there's probably got to be an explanation as to why.
Okay. Well, my whole thinking of it is, I'm paying a invoice, I should say, but I've never seen an invoice. She will not show me how much. On an invoice, how much I'm supposed to be paying?
But it is on your payroll stub. Check.
Well,
how much the deduction?
Yeah, my payroll.
Yeah,
it just shows how much she's taken out, right, is what it shows.
Go around these people and go talk to the plan administrator, the people in charge. Yeah, and that's the first few pages. If you had that emailed to you, that book, the first few pages will tell you the name of the plan administrator and their phone number.
Okay.
Call them.
So it's not actually the insurance company. It's whoever they went through to get it.
It's the difference between health insurance, which actually is something that people buy on their own, and an ERISA plan, or an Employer Retirement Insurance Security Act plan, which we could take all day and put everybody to sleep, but that's usually what you would call a group plan or an employer plan. Those differences are a plan administrator versus an insurance company. The technicalities of it, we don't have time for, but you're looking for the term plan administrator and a phone number in the first three or four pages of the plan book.
Okay, that's what I will do.
Okay.
All right.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck. Good luck, Brian. Thank you for listening. Thanks for calling. We do have a line open. Now we have two because Brian's gone. 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Tim, you're up next. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott Sherman, AM and the PM.
Hello, Tim.
Hey, I'm not going to take up a lot of time, Scott. I listened to the podcast this morning from the conversation of last Wednesday because I was in Nashville listening, and I got on an airplane and missed the doctor calling in.
You mean last Thursday?
Last Thursday. My apologies.
Right. That's right.
I've been in the hospital three times with surgeries, and I had an infection because it's a breeding ground. There's a lot of sick people there. It's a breeding ground for infections. I had to send a catheter through my wound and spray in Dankin solution, which is bleach water, for weeks to kill the infection internally.
Whoa.
So it's just, again, when the doctor said it was kind of a false statement, no, I thought you did very well with your statement last week.
Well, I appreciate that. I felt that I was walking into water without really knowing if there were sharks there. Not because he was laying in wait, because I didn't have my facts and information.
Sure.
But I will say that from a legal point of view, I think he said it would be unethical of me to look into it. I think it would be unethical not to look into the possibility of it. And you know what? It would also be unethical to file any kind of litigation that didn't have a basis. So I will say that at this point, that type of litigation is very, very difficult. So no one's trying to, you don't see any ads out there for MRSA cases if you stay up late enough on TV. So it's a very huge health crisis, but I don't think it's something where lawyers are sharking around looking for clients whose family members died of MRSA. I wonder
why not, because it sounds perfect for those lawyers to me.
Well, maybe it's because the attitude is that, well, we warned you in the intake. By the way, I went to the websites of the three major health organizations in town here. I'm not going to name them. And not one of them on their website had the word MRSA or had the acronym MRSA. They had general statements about how clean their places are, and yet at the same time, the legal cases that are brought in this subject are very few and far between. So I don't care about the litigation. I want people to go in the hospital and have the best opportunity to get great care, which in this community they do, and also come out of there not sicker than they were when they went in and alive.
Thanks, Scott.
Okay. All right, Tim. Thank you.
Have a great day.
For the call.
Thanks.
When you go in the hospital, and I don't know this, because when you go in the hospital, you're all doped up and you sign a bunch of stuff. Is there anything you sign that says,
yeah,
you know, I understand that by coming in this facility, I'm exposing myself to all blah, 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 blah. I would think that you'd have to sign something like that.
There's an informed consent form, but I have not seen one. I've got a lot of those that my clients have. I did not see any that are in bold that say you have a 3% chance of contracting this MRSA or some deadly disease.
Because it's probably just a generic statement saying, I understand and I realize that I'm doing this at my own risk. I'm going to be exposed to all kinds of things.
It's generic. This particular strain of stuff is so deadly, and the CDC and the medical community and the government, actually, both the Trump administration and the Obama administration have addressed this particular strain of this methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus.
Right, if you get MRSA, is it a death sentence, or
no,
can you?
No, you got about 20% chance of making it. 120,000 people get it. 20,000 people die. That's of the reported numbers. So, you know, that's a pretty good sample. So even if the cause of death is sepsis, which is sort of the breakdown of the body, gets out of control, the raging nondescript infection, even if that was MRSA, I think that the survival rate of contracting MRSA is about 80%.
Okay. That would match the numbers that you just mentioned, the 100-something. Okay. Phil is here. There's still a line open now because we finished with Tim. 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Phil. Welcome to 590. No, it's Phil. P-H-I-L. Phil. Phil, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott Sherman. How's everybody doing? Hey, about 30 years ago, a company bought a little lot next to us, way down below our property line, and the property started falling over. We won a huge judgment against them, and then they quit making their payments, so the bank foreclosed on them. I won a huge judgment and wound up with nothing, okay? Mm. Now, through the years, they put up a retaining wall. Through the years, water's starting to go around that retaining wall, and now some of our property's falling again under theirs. Now, they built up against that property line. We didn't. Is there anything I can do to protect myself or go after them so this won't happen again?
Right. It's all yours, Scott.
The law allows a lot of self-help as long as you're not trespassing on other people's property or committing some type of nuisance or redirecting natural flows of water. So the answer is, theoretically, yes, there is something you can do, especially if the retaining wall is sort of directing something dangerous like water at you. Now, does that mean you take a sledgehammer and knock the retaining wall down? I wouldn't tell you to do that if I was your.
Well, no, the water's going down to them off our hillside.
Did they? When you said you didn't collect on it, how long ago was that judgment?
Oh, 20 years ago.
Did they file bankruptcy on that?
The people that own the property filed bankruptcy. My lawyer then said, "Well, there's nothing to do now."
And so these are the successors in interest or the new folks that are in the same spot. I would have a letter sent to them from a real estate lawyer and say, "Hey, causing my people problems, and let me tell you, go check CaseNet. They don't mess around, so get fixing." And, you know, if that problem is still there and those people have taken over that property, yes, that damage that was caused under their administration, so to speak, their regime, could be compensable to you. So can you do something? Yeah. I would consult with a real estate lawyer. Because, you know, I know it sucks that you probably spent a bunch of money and got a judgment you can't do anything about. But maybe this is one where you can make them take it down or make them change it through something called an injunction. And that wouldn't be a money damages thing, but that would be a court order to say, hey, this retaining wall is damaging the neighbor. That would be Phil's property. And the judge might make them change it before you have more damage you can't collect on. So the short answer is, if you got a real estate lawyer, great, consult with them. If you don't, I know somebody that will talk to you for nothing and then plot out your strategy.
That's what I was going to ask you. You probably knew somebody.
I do. What county and state?
Jefferson County, Missouri.
Oh, people tripping over themselves to talk to you about Jefferson County real estate problems. I got somebody who's good on this.
The next question is, Phil, do you have Scott's email address?
Let's see, what would Johnny Londo say? Are you kidding me? Law office of ScottSherman at gmail.com.
Woo-hoo-hoo, yeah.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck. Okay, you too. It's Brian's turn. Brian, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hey, AM and the PM. How you guys doing?
Thank you, Brian.
Yes, I had MRSA once, just so you guys know, and it was crazy. It hurt, but it went away after a while, so it sucked. But,
how do you know you have it? What you say it hurt? What hurts? What's it feel
well,
like?
Well, it's kind of like when you stand. I had it in my ankle, and when I'd stand, the blood would rush to it, and it would be like excruciating. You'd have to sit back down. So I went to a doctor, and he said I probably got it from an emergency room visit years ago. So, you know, right before it happened, I went to the ER for the flu, and he basically said you probably got it when you went to the ER because it's contagious through touch, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
There is a solution like not like a fix, but a solution that is a liquid combination of chemicals high in some sort of rubbing alcohol that they've had really good success with. But the standard has not been set. The CDC has not instructed or ordered, and Congress hasn't said, or any regulatory body like Health and Human Services, this is what you have to use to kill MRSA. And so I'm very sympathetic to a lot of medical facilities. Like, what are we supposed to do? We got people with gunshot wounds. We got people, you know, that are dying of double pneumonia. What are we supposed to do with these people? And the answer is, you got to do something a little bit different than you've been doing. And most medical facilities are not emergent or trauma centers. So this is not the time to be, you know, we're going to sue them all. But it was eye-opening to me that I stepped on what seemed to be some sort of a hornet's nest, and the numbers are bad.
Yeah, Brian, I didn't do anything. Yeah, I had a quick question. In a subdivision I live in St. Charles County, some guy took down a street sign because he didn't want it on his property. And my main question is, if you've already had one case where an ambulance came in for somebody having a stroke, and that sign being down caused the guy to get delayed, but so the guy didn't pass away, but are we liable as a subdivision because this guy took down a street sign?
The guy is the one who's liable. He should be arrested and fined for that. You can't do that. You can't just take a street sign down. Scott, am I crazy?
No, Frank's right. And this general rule is this. The intentional acts, especially the intentional criminal acts of people, do intervene on negligence. So a lot of times, you know, with the exception of sort of bouncer cases at bars, if an employee punches somebody in the face and knocks their teeth out, the company is usually not liable. In your case, the homeowners association or the subdivision wouldn't be liable unless you had a vote and you voted that it was okay for Joe Smith to take the sign down. Then they hit the gavel and there were minutes. So Joe Smith, let's say that's the guy, the sign taker, he would be liable. Theoretically, and I think actually, not only for the crime of destruction of the government's property, but also for creating this danger of the delayed response. But
that's
don't
a very dangerous.
Would
it's a very dangerous thing to do. Think about this: what if some knucklehead kid decided to take a can of black spray paint, and you know how some house numbers are on the curb, and he just went down the street and just sprayed over all the numbers, and then somebody needed an ambulance, and the ambulance couldn't find the house, and somebody dies.
Right.
You should be responsible for that. Same thing with a street sign. It's really dangerous to do that.
Can they contact the county and say, "Hey, our street sign's gone"?
Well, can you prove who took it? Can you prove who took it?
We can't, but the guy, we know who did, because it was on his property. He asked, in the homeowners association meeting the year before, he complained about the sign, and he's like, why don't we just take it down, because it obstructs my view. And it's a private subdivision. In other words, the streets are private.
One intense interrogation with this guy in the hot seat, he'll crumble. This guy will start sweating and fold, and then he has to pay the price, and that sign will go back up. Somebody needs to have the police call that guy and take him in and question him. If enough people go, he took it. We know he took it.
And Brian,
and enough people know it, they'll take him in.
Brian, even though it's not government property, it's malicious destruction of property. The sign doesn't belong to him. It belongs to the association, I guess. So you guys should call the police. I mean, this is a perfect St. Charles County case. I mean, homeowners arguing with each other about something where one guy just wants to do whatever he wants and is belligerent. Here you go. Call the cops. Have them come over and say, he intentionally destroyed this sign. Boom. Get him a ticket and let him figure it out in the municipal court. That's where
the irony, I'll let you guys go, but the irony is the trustees have told me, hey, calm down. I'm like, you're crazy. We're all going to get sued when somebody dies. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I emailed the trustees saying, look, here's my concern, and I don't want to be sued. And the bottom line, the trustees are kind of like, oh, we don't care who took it. I'll hang up.
Wow, that's some great board of trustees.
Yeah,
huh?
Well, welcome to the Homeowners Association hell.
Anyway.
Brian, one quick little thing, and I'll tell Frank, too. Sometimes when you sort of allow something and not and do it sort of... You do it sort of not expressly, but in sort of impliedly. Here's one. We just settled this case. We just did it the other day. Lady lent her car to her daughter. The daughter's boyfriend, who did not have permission, according to the lady, drove the car up on the sidewalk and smashed into our guy. Guess what I did? I sued the guy and the lady who owned the car. And she said, well, you can't do that. I told you it wasn't us. We'll figure that out later. So, Homeowners Association, if there was a lawsuit, guess who would also be named? You guys. And if you want to pay those insurance premiums or get your name out there or get sued or whatever, go for it. Otherwise, tell your creep that took the sign down to put it back up or you're going to call the cops. It's simple.
That's it. That's simple. Jason, you're next. Welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Great, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. AM and the PM over here.
Thank you.
I have another property-related question. I had a neighbor We share backyards. I'm on the main street. He lives in the cul-de-sac. And he built a new fence between just 2 feet over into his property line from our shared fence. I'm wanting to know, can I take down the shared fence and enjoy his fence because it's new and nicer?
Sure. No, that's a good one.
Well, I'm going to step on Frank. What do you think?
No, that's okay. That's a good one. I would think so, yeah.
I think if you're enjoying the view but you're not trespassing, yes. Why not? I mean, the only thing that fence is doing is separating the boundary line. You can have a boundary with a neighbor and not have a fence between the two things. Now, the question then becomes, how interested are you in that 2 feet? You want to go put a, you know, lawn chairs there and a hot tub and you want to take that? At about... But, you know, between 7 and 10 years, depending on if it's Missouri or Illinois, and you can take it through adverse possession if he doesn't say anything. But there's nothing that says that that fence has to be something that separates the boundary. He has decided that his visual boundary of his property is going to be his new fence. So take it down.
Excellent. Should I let him know first as a courtesy? So should I just go with it? I don't really know him.
You know,
unfortunately, I'm friendly with the neighbors on each side of me.
But then if you do that, and if you do that, and he goes, "No, I don't want you to do that." Now what? I mean, now you've.
Well, that's why I don't really want to open that conversation.
You don't need you don't need his permission.
What's the fence made? Is it an old rusty fence, or is it, you know, sort of like?
Well, our backyards all back up to a grade school, like. Kind of a baseball field playground of sorts, and each house has the common chain link fence towards the back. We happen to have a chain link fence between each yard, so he's built a really nice white aluminum fence just 2 feet over into his property.
Right.
So, yeah. You know,
he can't see your fence now, can he? Because his fence blocks it.
His fence is 8 feet tall. He can't see
it. What does he care if you take the other one down? He can't see it anyway.
Well, that's why I was calling. I just wanted to make sure. I didn't know if I was going to get a letter from the county.
In fact, it sounds to me like he put his fence up so he wouldn't have to see that anyway.
Right.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it doesn't change your ownership of the boundary, but I think it now sort of begs the question as to where the fence line is for keeping dogs and other things out of each other's yard. It's his new aluminum white fence.
And if I'm visualizing this right, removing that side of the fence won't have any impact at all on his yard, his life, his fence, nothing.
No, he's decided to to fortress up behind his white picket fence.
Yeah, sometimes you ask people and you get the answer you don't want to hear.
Yeah,
even if he has no grounds to give you that answer.
I have been told it's better to apologize than ask permission. I'm not saying that works for everything, but I think for this chain link fence, it's probably fine.
All right, well, I'll go with that.
All right, Jason, thank you. Thanks for listening.
Hey, thank you so much. Take care, guys.
You bet. George is next. George, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott. AM and the PM. So this is a little bit complicated, but so I got a friend he and his dad shared the same name. He was a junior of this person. His dad, they both lived here in Missouri, but his dad owned some property in Texas. And then his dad passed away. The property's become overgrown. The county that it's in keeps wanting to send his dad bills, pay back taxes, and whatever. My friend doesn't have anything to do with the property. He wanted to give it to this county as a park or something. But they keep issuing arrest warrants in Texas for my friend, even though it shares his name. He says, well, if your dad's dead, it's yours. It's your problem. He sent letters to the prosecutor in Texas explaining it. A judge throws it out, and then a few months later, it gets refiled, or the next year when taxes are due again, it gets refiled, and he's back getting these warrants. I'm just wondering what his options are.
First of all, if his name's on it, it is his property. It was in both their names.
No, it's his dad's property.
It's his dad's name.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said it was in both their names.
No. It's just in his dad's name. It had been in their family. It was actually his grandmother's property. His dad bought it from his grandmother It was just solely in his dad's name who's passed away.
And who did his dad leave it to when he passed away?
Well, he didn't. They didn't have a... It didn't go through probate or...
Well, you know what? Scott will take it from here, but if I'm this guy, I just wash my hands of the whole thing. That's not my land. It's not my property.
Send him a death certificate, right?
I'd have an attorney say, leave this guy alone. Well, he needs to get an attorney letterhead for $100, $200, an attorney saying, hey, leave my client alone. It's not his property. Do whatever you want, but leave him alone. I mean, that's what I do. That'll get there. Did Scott take
it? Yeah, I like what Frank is saying here, because the county in Texas is walking the line here of actually violating junior civil rights. Are they going to arrest a guy that doesn't own a piece of property because he has a similar sounding name as another guy? I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. The problem is somebody's going to have to go to the recorder of deeds and pull that deed for that property to make sure that there wasn't a designation after senior passed away that it went to junior. What your friend probably needs to do is have a quit claim deed drawn up, maybe in the name of the estate of his father, and give that, because he wouldn't have the legal right to give it to anybody. It's not his. But for the estate of senior to give it to whomever it is that they determined that should give to. But how your friend is getting caught in this is just sort of the name game. And
unless, like you said, on the deed, it's that right of survivorship.
That's
thing.
Right. And, yes, exactly. And so you
and maybe Junior didn't even know his dad put that on there. And then
very
it is his.
Very likely. And then what happens is they're going through, and the computer says it's this guy. And even though the judge is throwing it out, they do technically would have the legal right to name him. But if Senior passed away without a will, then that thing is just sort of sitting there in limbo, and I can't believe the state hasn't just moved in on the taxes to take the thing anyway. But I think some action by Junior has to be made here. Otherwise, you know, they're going to keep issuing these summonses that really are illegal. I mean, world?
We both know that they'll do whatever they can, because some people will cave and go, well, I guess I need to pay this. And they're taking the chance. Maybe that'll happen.
And think about it. And where what state does Junior, let's just, not, instead of telling me what state, we don't know if the people in Texas are going to go find him. Does he live in Texas?
No, he lives in Missouri.
Then there's no way.
He has family in Texas.
Yeah. But
he has family in Texas he wants to go visit. He's afraid if he goes there, you know, and he gets a stop sign violation, they'll find a warrant for him, and then it's, you know, you got all kind of trouble.
And they might until this is done. So I would say the county in which the property is located in Texas probably has a fine real estate lawyer. He's probably got a bolo tie and a big 10-gallon hat. Have your buddy call him and straighten this here thing out.
All right. Thanks.
Sure.
All right, George. Thank you. And Debbie, it is your turn. Welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott Sherman.
Hello, Debbie.
Hello. Hey, I just want to follow up a little bit, because I have somewhat of a same issue with it's my yard and the neighbor's yard, and then the easements. Well, and that guy was talking about how the guy took the sign down. Isn't there some kind of an easement for that subdivision that they would be able to keep that up?
Frank?
Well, they can keep it up. Where that sign is doesn't belong to that guy anyway. That is basically their property. Of course, they can demand that they can legally get the police involved, make him put it back up.
Yeah, it sounds like a gated community. You said the streets are private, but the property of the homeowner doesn't mean that signage belongs to him.
Here's the problem this guy had, Debbie, if you remember, is he went to them. They don't care. They flat out said, yeah, we don't care. We don't care if he took the sign. That's when I'd get a lawyer, and I'd call the police, and I'd get two or three other people to confirm, yeah, we know who stole it. Let them question that guy.
That's right.
And it'll become between that guy and the police. If the homeowner association if they don't care, well, this guy does, and other people that live there do. So let this guy face the cops and ask
homeowners associations, a bunch of nothing made out to be the Supreme Court of the United States.
And usually the people who can't wait and campaign to become president of the homeowner, usually those people are your worst nightmare. Anybody that wants to take that crap on is something maybe kind of wrong with them, unless and I know a couple of friends who've done this, they just want to make sure some knucklehead isn't running the place, so they run and campaign to become president to make sure things are done right. Right. There are those people.
I always wondered, but, who goes to city council meetings? It's the people on the homeowners association.
Yes, exactly.
Or who want to be, exactly. Yeah. Which is even worse.
Debbie, was there anything else?
I have a situation with my neighbor and some trees, and I was just trying to figure out if there was some kind of a...
Bring it. We got 2.5 minutes. What's the situation?
Well, I want to cut some of them down, and they're right on the property line.
Frank, you are the expert in the tree.
Is the trunk of the tree, the roots of the tree on your property or somebody else's?
I'm going to say it's probably more on mine than theirs.
No, probably won't do it. You got a survey? You got something to show exactly where your property line is? If it's mostly on your property,
cut it
down.
Oh, yeah, I could get one from the county. Yeah.
And look at it and cut it down.
Oh, yeah, I could do that.
And any of it that's hanging on your side of the property line, you can destroy all of it that's hanging over on your side, and that might kill the whole tree.
Ding, ding, ding.
But you absolutely have the right to destroy the part that's on your property.
Okay. Well, then you gave me an idea. I'll go get the survey from the county.
And I don't know how big a tree it is, but also if you think it's dead or if it's an unhealthy tree,
mm-hmm.
you might want an arborist to come on and give you an opinion that thing is dangerous. And even if it isn't exactly the trunk on your property, for safety's sake, you can knock that thing out. But you got to get an opinion.
By the way, so we don't forget it, Debbie, take your phone immediately and take pictures of the tree.
Right. Yep.
From front, side, back, take every angle. Take pictures of it. Yeah. Good ones.
So much fun to do these things.
All right.
Almost as much fun as Tim has in his job.
Good luck, Debbie. Thank you for listening. We appreciate
it. Thank you. Uh-huh.
Okay. Bye-bye. She sounded nice. She sounded like a nice neighbor.
I would love to be Debbie's neighbor.
I would, too. I'd say, go ahead, cut the
tree. I'd like to be Jason's neighbor, too. He's doing me the favor of hauling away a nasty old chain-link fence for free.
All right. Well, we've done it again. I'll let you give them, once again, your email address.
LawOfficeOfScottSherman@gmail.com.
You know, and Steve Staley, you know him.
Yeah, I was there again.
You know more
today.
About him than I do. I will know him later in the spring. That's another story about my knee. Dr. Steve Staley, sponsor Scott's segment. STAHLE, DrSteveStaley.com is the website. 314-909-1666. Shoulders, knees, hard to treat areas. He is a sports medicine physician. You may not be into sports or be an athlete. That's the guy I want anyway. If he can take care of them, he can take care of me, because it's a big deal for them. And it's a big deal for me, even though I'm not an athlete. I still want to be able to get around and move around. PRP, platelet-rich plasma. This is a huge deal. And he is a big promoter of it. And if you're active military, half price on PRP. Dr. Steve Staley. Scott Sherman, thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank. Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Happy Easter, everybody.
Yeah, you too. That's right. Easter is Sunday. First Community Credit Union. Boy, oh boy, this weather, Saturday and Sunday, are really supposed to be nice. And a lot of people go, well, you know what? I think I like to, you know, that garage floor coating they put on, that Pebble Tech looking stuff, like it makes it look like a showroom floor. Maybe that's something you want to have done. Maybe you have new garage doors. Maybe you want to build on a garage. Maybe you want to add onto your house. Maybe you want to finish off the basement, put in a pool, redo the deck. Takes money. If you don't have it all, and you're a homeowner, you're in a real good position to borrow money if you have a home equity line of credit with First Community Credit Union. You pay as you go. You get a certain amount of credit, line of credit. You use what you need, and that's it, and that's all you pay on. And for the first year, if you apply for that line of credit, by June 30th, for the first year, you get an incredible rate for 12 months of 2.49% APR. That is a very smart way to borrow money, using the equity in your house and using First Community Credit Union. Over 40 locations, the largest credit union in the St. Louis area. It's where I do all my banking and have for years. You're going to really like banking there. First Community Credit Union. Sponsors the yard sale Saturday morning right here, 590, 7 to 9 o'clock. It's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is 590 The Fan, KFNS Wood River, St. Louis, and 590thefan.com, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. President Trump is calling it a good day after the release of the Mueller report. Speaking at the White House today, Trump said the report confirmed no collusion and no obstruction. He again called it a hoax and argued that no president should ever have to go through what he's gone through. The final report says there's no clear evidence that the president did not commit obstruction of justice. The report states that if investigators had confidence that Trump clearly did not commit obstruction of justice, they would have said that. Congressman Adam Schiff is weighing in on AG Bill Barr's role in the report.
The Attorney General did a grave disservice to the country by misrepresenting significant parts of the Mueller report.
The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee spoke with reporters in Burbank today and noted that